16,000 pink slips at Bank of America.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich. The country's biggest banking employer has a plan to slash 16,000 jobs by year-end. Bank of America's plans are the subject of a front-page story in this morning's Wall Street Journal. Chris Lowe is chief economist at FTN Financial.
The Bank of America decision to lay people off is a decision to try and improve their profits through the cost side. They can't do it by earning more money, so they're going to do it by saving money on costs.
Dan Fitzpatrick reported the story for the Journal. He says B of A has a lot of fat to trim, but that'll only get them so far.
The one big concern that analysts and investors have is that if they cut too much, that they're really giving up a lot of revenue. And the question for B of A and a lot of other big banks, frankly, is where is their revenue going to come from going forward?
Bank of America shares are down more than 1% in the first hours of trading. Beyond that, where's Wall Street? Down, though not by all that much. The S&P 500 index is down 0.2% this hour. The NASDAQ down 0.3%. The Dow down just 0.1% to 13,567. U.S. initial claims for unemployment insurance fell just a bit last week by 3,000. And the Philadelphia Federal Reserve says manufacturing in the Philadelphia region is down for a fifth straight month in September. This morning, the Census Bureau put out a raft of new data for 2011. It includes the income and poverty rates from state to state and across major metro areas. Nationally, the poverty rate was largely unchanged, but it rose across California, for example, and poverty rate rose in New York City. Numbers are, of course, one way to look at poverty from place to place. Blogger Tim DeShant tried another way, satellite images of tree cover in urban areas. Tim's analysis started quite a conversation at his blog. It's called Per Square Mile, and the topic's a great fit with our ongoing wealth and poverty coverage. Tim, good to talk with you.
Thanks, Jeff. Good to be here.
First of all, tell me a little about the actual research that got you thinking about this question.
I stumbled on this paper a couple months ago. It was looking at tree cover and economic data for 210 cities across the United States. And the researchers were asking the question, could they find a correlation between income inequality and tree cover? And the answer very simply was yes.
And when you went and looked down from satellite images to try and get a visual sense of this issue, how obvious was it?
It was very obvious. The first thing that I did is I went to neighborhoods that I knew, where I knew there were wealthy people juxtaposed with less wealthy people nearby. And it turned out to be even easier than I thought.
So tell me about two neighborhoods that you looked at. What was the difference?
One that I was very familiar with was in Oakland and a neighboring enclave called Piedmont. West Oakland is historically and is known to have been very poor and working class and lower. And Piedmont, on the other hand, is kind of, a very wealthy enclave just a few miles away up in the hills. And the differences there were very obvious. West Oakland looked like the concrete jungle, whereas Piedmont looked more like a real jungle.
Now, when people get wealthier, they consume more of just about everything. That's just basic economics. Why should trees be any different?
When you're wealthier, you tend to be able to own more land. And when you own more land, of course, you have more room to plant trees. Wealthier cities have larger tax bases to support more trees. And so they can take care of the costs of planting and upkeep, maintenance, and replacement that, say, a less wealthy city can't.
So that's what causes what we're seeing here. Why should we be worried about it?
One of the reasons we should be concerned about it is there are some direct economic impacts for having trees. Trees reduce stress. That makes people happier and more productive. They also increase property values. They can reduce cooling costs by up to 30%. They take air pollution out of the air. You know, and all of these things can kind of add together to a large economic impact that, of course, is exacerbated in poor neighborhoods. So it's not necessarily that trees can reduce income inequality, but they can certainly raise people's quality of life, which I think is something that we should all be concerned about.
Tim DeShant, he blogs about tree density, population density, all kinds of density at persquaremile.com. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Jeff.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing investment, insurance, and retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S. since 1896. AllianzUSA.com. Marketplace's coverage of wealth and poverty issues is supported by the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. More at FordFoundation.org.
This week, Russian state media trumpeted a newly declassified diamond deposit in Siberia. The huge deposit is 62 miles wide. It's at the bottom of a meteor crater. The news made headlines around the world, but inside the diamond business, no big deal. Here's reporter David Nogueras.
On the sixth floor of this building in downtown Portland, Oregon, behind two bulletproof doors, and inside this man-sized safe, Yossi Malka keeps most of the inventory for the Tel Aviv Diamond Company in a white plastic bucket. Malka is holding a diamond, which he moves ever so slightly, making it sparkle in the light.
This stone, wholesale value is over $45,000.
But Malka says he doesn't expect the news out of Siberia to deflate the price of this stone or any other in his safe.
Because it's nothing new. The Russians have been mining diamonds for a long time.
In fact, this new deposit isn't new at all. The Russians have known about it since the 1970s, and although it was considered a state secret, it wasn't a very well-kept one, says Des Killily. He's a London-based analyst with the Royal Bank of Canada.
The fact that it hadn't been made particularly public is because it wasn't that important.
Killily says he's talked to nearly a dozen people who've been to the site, including geologists, formerly with the South African diamond company De Beers. All of them told him the same thing. The crater's filled with the type of diamonds that are used to cut and machine materials, not the kind you make earrings out of. While those gemstones cost a few $1,000 a carat, an industrial diamond of the same size will cost you just a few bucks. Still, in boom times, the demand for industrial diamonds can be enormous. But Killily says right now the global economy isn't booming, and that might be one reason why all those diamonds are still buried in a hole in Siberia. I'm David Nogueras for Marketplace.
And finally, a lot of TV infomercials are pitching financial safety in gold, but look out. According to Fox 5 in New York City, there are lots of convincing but fake gold bars around. They're filled with tungsten. Beware. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Trains in China a decade ago, not quite the lab of luxury.
Noisy, overcrowded, smoky, filthy. It wasn't uncommon to be sharing your bench with live chickens in wicker baskets.
I'm Kai Rizdal. My, how times change. A smooth ride on the bullet train to Beijing, quiet as a library. That story next time on Marketplace. It's from APM.